Hi, this is Ann Penny of the East Bay Wealth Branch. Wealth is actively supporting member recruiting through a project launched in 2020 called One by One We Grow. This is in response to years of requests for help from branches. The project is gaining traction, fueled by the burning questions of what would change for your branch if you had more hands on deck, and how do we go there? We want to introduce the One by One We Grow project, and please tell us all about, Mary Beth is going to introduce our guests and tell us all about how this project is changing perspectives and increasing energy for recruiting new members and how everyone can participate and benefit from One by One We Grow.
Thanks, Ann. Well, take it away, Jan.
Okay. Well, thank you. First of all, I got to thank Michael. He had to patch me in. I'm not with it, I guess. So thank you, Michael, for patching me in. And thank you, Mary Beth and Ann and everybody for Sandy for making us part of this One Wolf Call. It's very exciting. We really do appreciate it. We launched our project in November, and we are meeting the second Wednesday of every month. We meet at 5 Pacific. And we're going to end our meetings in August during Congress. And that's where we'll make our final report and we'll decide some next steps. So our goal, and we'd love to have everybody here join us at least. We'd love to have at least a couple of organizers from every branch. People can join us at any time. We do send a notice every month, a couple of notices to our branch listserv so that whoever's on that list can inform the right people. Or you can let me know, and I'll ask Michael if he would, please, he's been so helpful to me, if he put my name and contact information in the chat so that people can just contact me directly. So appreciate that we know that we want to have more members. And I just think that now is really a great time to ask folks to stand up with us for peace and freedom. There's so much going on in our community, so much going on in our world, and I think we really know the value in our organization of speaking our peace. And I think that through our branches and our section, we've conquered and we're still adding new ways to engage remotely and new ways to invite people to be with us. And I know that we're also all excited to do more in-person actions and meet with our old friends and new friends when that time comes too. So what do we do on our meetings? Well, we know that new members bring in new ideas. They add diversity to our branch. They let us expand our bandwidth. And during our meetings, we share our successes and our challenges. And that's been very illuminating and very helpful for each of us. We also, the leaders, Shelton and I, and Mary Beth, and Darian, and Mary Hansen Harrison, who are the five people that you'll remember maybe contacting. We contacted each branch before we did the kickoff in November. But we send you resources that help you sign up people. And then we also have Wolf-related awards for doing this important work. We have books that will tell you more about our amazing Wolf history. We have sashes, we have T-shirts and sweatshirts that say loud and strong that we're here and really show our colors. And I'm also so excited that we've had two experienced and top-notch organizers who have joined in coalition with us and speak with us at our meetings. And they've shared their proven techniques, and they've really been an inspiration to us. So, and I'm ready to introduce them if they're on.
We are on. Go ahead, Jan.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you, Debbie and Francis. Well, let me start with Debbie. Debbie Bunka is the membership and fundraising director for the Iowa Farmers Union, and she comes to Iowa via Canada. She relocated in Iowa in 1996 with her family, and prior to joining the Iowa Farmers Union team, she wrote a monthly column on food history and the availability of seasonal local foods for the Ames Tribune. She also, at that time, was writing a regular food column for the Regional Facet magazine, for any of you that are familiar with that magazine. For 5 years, she ran a farmer's market in Ames. She opened up Iowa's first year-round indoor market and launched a CSA. So coinciding with her lifelong interest in political and social and economic justice, she traveled Iowa for 9 months. She talked with people about clean water issues and volunteered for 2 years with Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement as a citizen lobbyist. And she also served as co-director for a local radio station. So I can't think of any better experiences that would have made a good fit for her in her work as a membership and development fundraising director with the Iowa Farmers Union. And she has tripled our membership, and I'm an Iowa Farmers Union member too, tripled our membership in the IFU, tripled it in just 5 years. So we here at our branch in Des Moines consider a good friend, and I think our committee that meets with us every month has really appreciated her. She's an activist, and she really supports the values that we share. Francis Engler is the California Political Director for Unite Here Local 11, and his commitment to helping others overcome barriers and break out of poverty was born out of his personal experiences and continues to drive him in his role as an organizing and political director for Local 11, and also for his work on the Board of Hospitality Training Academy. Having been raised in a family of dairy farmers in rural Wisconsin, his mother instilled in her children the importance of hard work, a fact that would characterize her daily life when she was widowed with three young children to care for. As an adolescent, Francis found inspiration, opportunity, and support from church, school, and activist organizations. Discovering that more was possible, Francis earned a scholarship and graduated from Yale University, where he first encountered and joined the Hotel and Food Service Worker Union, Unite Here, while working his way through school. Knowing the value of support and encouragement, he has made it his life's work to help those in poverty build a path to self-sufficiency and family-sustaining wages through union employment in LA's vast hospitality industry. Unite Here Local 11, the union's regional center for Southern California and Arizona, has organized tens and thousands of low-wage workers, and they create an inspiring network of worker activists in politics. We met Francis through his amazing mother, Joan, who I know many of you know Joan. She's been part of our branch for many years and is active in really every single one of the projects that we address here in our branch as we address the existential threats of the climate crisis and nuclear proliferation and the degradation of our democracy. So we were thrilled when these two people agreed to help us power change with the help of new members. And I'm so happy that they've both been with us and are with us here tonight.
So introducing Francis and Deb, thank you for doing that, Jan. And right now we'd ask Deb and Francis to discuss their experience or success as organizers and recruiters in their own individual organizations. Deb, if you could talk about some of the techniques that you've told us about in the one-by-one We Grow project, just so listeners hear the kinds of techniques you've used in your work in other locations.
Sure. When I think about membership, I kind of think of it in three different or with four different things in mind: member acquisition, member engagement, member retention, and member referral. And every plan that I make, because I always at the beginning of the year have to create a membership growth plan and present it to our board, they always contain these four elements. And member acquisition, what are the things you're going to do to get new members? Member engagement, how am I going to, engage our existing members, but also reach out to new ones? Member retention, you know, what am I doing to pay attention to the people we have? Because if you can't keep what you have, you're in trouble, because that's a non-sustainable model of membership. Retention is just as important, if not more, than acquisition. And referral refers to peer-to-peer, because the best word of mouth, the best recommendation that any organization can have is from another member. If your members are speaking about your organization positively to others, that is something money can't buy, that, you know, and you can formalize that in a peer-to-peer membership program, or it just happens, you know, it just happens. So when I make up these, when I create the plan for every year, it contains information about all of those things. And then for the acquisition, I come up with all sorts of plans, and I went back into my files and I found different years, different plans. There was one year I went every single week and I listed what I was going to be doing every week of the every week of the year. And it was, the columns were emails and letters, second column phone bank calls, third social media, then email updates, and then event and outreach. And for every one of those things, I listed, you know, each week of the year what I was going to be doing. Then I realized that was slightly insane. And I just, because that was a lot. And I, you know, I faltered along the way because I think it was a bit ambitious. So I did it by month. But it helps to think about these things, like when you're sending out membership letters to prospects, how are you going to follow that up? My kind of way of doing that is first the letter, then maybe a second letter, an email, a phone call. I found that approach to be quite effective. But, you know, thinking about these things, I also come up with all sorts of ideas, like matching up lifetime and beginning farmer, you know, prospects, lifetime members and beginning farmer prospects, and approaching our lifetime members and saying, you know, do you have someone in mind who's a beginning farmer that you'd like to sponsor, or would you just donate money to sponsor people that we come across? You know, and that was really actually quite a successful thing. Another thing is offering a discount for a dual membership with another organization. For instance, we paired with Women, Food, and Agriculture Network, and we both offered $5 off our memberships if they were purchased together, and that worked out really well for us. Doing a legislative outreach where I sent letters to every member of the Iowa legislature. We did not sign up any Republicans, but we did sign up a lot of Democrats, which has been great for a lot of reasons, you know, which is kind of what I expected, frankly. But you got to try. You got to try. But, you know, that really has been wonderful for us. Just coming up with ideas, like last year because of COVID, and I know people were suffering financially, we were able to raise enough member sponsorship donation money that we could offer free trial memberships to organic farmers, for instance. And so that worked, you know, these things, they don't always work out well, but these happen to. The idea is to decide on groups to target and find a way to reach out to them. Normally it would be getting in front of a group, standing like at a food co-op in the foyer or the lobby area and having a table, or, you know, going to different events. I've been to Wilf events with the table. but just finding a way, like for you guys, you might want to reach out to a university sorority. Find a way to get in front of them to talk about Wilf. You know, if you call them up, a lot of times they will let you come and talk. I did that at a fraternity, which scared the daylights out of me. I didn't know what to expect, but, you know, it's a good thing.
Deb, could you say just a little bit about what active tabling looks like?
I go to I've been all around the state. I've been out of state tabling.
You don't just sit at the table, right?
More or less I do, frankly. I got to be honest, that's about 90% of what I do, but I'm always like saying hi to passerbys, and, you know, if they kind of look over, I'll say, have you heard of us? You got to be outgoing. You got to reach out to them. You have to be unafraid to, you know, you don't want to make an ass of yourself, but you have to reach out and engage people. And, you know, I don't like to stand in front of my table because that makes me uncomfortable, but I think it also makes other people uncomfortable. These are my theories. So I do stand behind my table, but I make sure that the table is has lots of information, not a huge amount, but and it's really, you know, laid out nicely. It's attractive. I want the table to be attractive, and I want to have essential information. And when I'm talking to somebody, I think we've discussed this at other meetings, and you have to ask people to join. You have to make the ask. You can talk, you can give your spiel. You have to develop that kind of short, brief description of what your group is and what you do. But at the end of it, you have to make the actual ask. And that's really important. But it's really important to be this. I hate to say this to women. You got to smile. You got to be pleasant. And you having a sense of humor helps, because God knows I've met some wackadoodles. And you can't react to that. So you just got to, you have to maintain some equanimity, have a sense of humor, and really try to engage people when you're doing tabling. And I have set up tables all outside, inside, all sorts of places, just where I know that there might be people that would be interested. And I think it's really effective. I can say that there have been maybe 3 events over 7 years where I never got any members, but that's it. And I think people, you know, you're not taking hostages there. You're chatting people up. So it's, you know, you learn how to do it better as you go on, too.
Thank you.
If there are any questions, please ask.
Hold your questions. We're going to have a Q&A at the end.
Okay,
but I wanted Francis to introduce himself and kind of talk a little bit about the exercises that we've heard you give as homework during the One by One We Grow meetings. Are you there, Francis?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
now we can.
Excellent. Okay. I'm really honored to be here with you today. I was an organizing director and am now the political director with Unite Here Local 11, which is a union of hotel and restaurant and industrial food service workers who are mostly immigrant and immigrant women and women of color, and we are in Southern California and Arizona, and our union, even though it represents some of the poorest of the working poor, is one of the fastest growing unions in the country. And I would say that if there's one rule about why it is growing the way it is because of a rule that that Cesar Chavez taught our union, because we were very close with the Farm Workers Union in California. And his basic rule is that every worker is an organizer. And so I want to build off Deb's suggestions, because I think a lot of her instructions about the way to go about organizing membership recruitment are, you know, better than anything I could give in sort of detail. But my main role in my union and that I hope to have here is to try to ask everyone to be an organizer, for everyone to participate in growing the organization. And that if everyone believes that joining your organization and participating will change the world, and if everyone then carries that belief to other people and tells them and asks them to join, you will grow and you will change the world. And so my goal and the thing that I try to work with people to do is to ask the questions, what would it take for every one of you who's listening to the call and every one of your members to participate in recruiting more members into the organization and to ask more and more people to join the things that you do. And everyone can do it. The question is just, how do we keep encouraging ourselves to do it? So I asked the question, what things get in our way and what things inspire us to overcome obstacles and to look for opportunities to invite people to join our work? So from that come a couple of exercises that we've been using in the group that's been working on recruitment. And the first one is for everyone to get comfortable with talking to people about what you're doing and asking people to join it. And what stops most of us from asking people to do things? It's the fear that they're going to say no. And so one of the exercises that we do in the union and that I invite you to do is to really overcome that fear that's built into all of us that someone's going to tell us no. And I recommend overcoming that by instead of looking at people saying no to you as a negative thing, celebrating it as a positive thing, and to assume that you're going to need, 10 or 20 people to tell you no before you find one person who's really going to join and get involved. And so one of the exercises is we try to get everybody out and have everybody set a goal for how many people they're going to get to tell them no. And so we want everyone here to go out and talk to 5 or 10 or 20 people and see how many people you can get to tell you no, they won't join. And whoever gets the most people to say no wins. And that's a way of trying to turn the usual resistance that we have, the usual nervousness that we have, on its head, and encourage people to just jump into that and to try and to celebrate trying. And so that's one thing, that one exercise I recommend. One other exercise I'll give is for everybody to put together a basic 2-3 sentence explanation of what you're doing, why you believe it's important, and what you want to ask someone to do. You can really do it in 3 sentences. And to practice that and practice it until, even by yourself, just write it down and until you memorize it. And try to memorize it, because once you memorize it, you'll be able to add things to it, build on it, and it won't make you as nervous in the moment of trying to talk to somebody to ask them to join. And then finally, we talked about what are some of the things that help, motivate people when they are, when they're making a decision about what to do in the world, or when they're struggling with something, trying to overcome a difficulty. And that question comes from our work in the union, because right now we're finding is the best time ever to ask people to be joining a social movement, because there is so much that's going on in the world. There are so many changes that people are facing. There are so many things that people are angry about, that we're finding that workers are asking us all the time to join, all the time to become part of the union, all the time how they can do something to make a difference. And we just need to try to give people the chance. And so we talked about some of the different things that motivate people, that people are basically motivated by an anger or a sense of injustice about something that's happening to them, or they're motivated by they're motivated by a story of possibility, or of hope, of a plan that they think will work. Or they're motivated by a sense of empathy and community, that they found people who understand them. And that if you do any of those three, you will find people who are motivated by one of those three. And so if you can just go out and find for yourself what moves you, is it your anger at an injustice, or your sense of urgency that something has to change because of something you see in the world, that's something that you can use to move other people and help recruit them to your cause. If you have a plan, if you have a story of something that's worked, something that's successful, you can inspire people that way. And if you have a community that you can invite people to where people are going to have a good time or feel that they are understood or that other people understand the experiences they're having or what they're going through, if you can tell a story that connects to people, then that kind of empathy will bring people to join what you're doing. And so I encourage people to find which of those three things motivates you and to develop a little bit of a simple way for you to talk to somebody else about that. So those are a few of the different ideas that we're bouncing around, but really all of them can be summarized by every worker is an organizer. Every one of you is an organizer. And if every one of you seeks to talk about your work with others and invite them to join, you'll grow.
Thanks, Francis. There are some members on the call who've been part of the One by One We Grow program, and I'd like to invite Yvonne Waldo from Fresno to talk about how things have been working in her branch. Yvonne, can you share with us how this has been going? Is your mic open, Yvonne? Let's see. I know she was
Mary
on
Beth,
earlier.
Mary Beth, there's no Yvonne Waldo on the call. Unless she signed in with something different. There's no Yvonne Waldo.
Okay. Yeah. I thought I saw her earlier on the call.
She was on earlier. Yeah.
Okay. Judy Adams, you had a description of how things were going at your branch. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, Judy's from Menlo Park, California, the Peninsula Palo Alto, California branch.
Yeah, I do. I am both the liaison and the contact person for our branch. So I get messages from time to time from people who have expressed an interest in joining and have written to National, or who have actually joined through National, and the information gets back to us that we need to make contact if they don't make contact with us. I also do our email and Facebook page, so I am in frequent contact with members and supporters, some who were lifetime members, not very active, aging out of the system a little bit, but still interested in doing things. And our most successful way of recruiting has been so far in the last couple of years through committee work. For example, we have two gift memberships to women who have worked in the community on housing, low income, low cost housing, interest in intentional community building, taking a census of unoccupied buildings or homes that could be transferred to shelter for low income persons or homeless people, and trying to get the city councils of our respective cities. We're in Menlo Park, Palo Alto, and somewhat in the Mountain View area, Redwood City, those surrounding cities and our counties of Santa Clara and San Mateo, to try to be sure that the city is doing something to meet its quota of low-income housing and not converting apartment buildings and properties to offices and commercial space before they have filled the needs of housing, which is a very, very tight, expensive, unfriendly market. We find city workers who have to commute outside of the community or live in motorhomes on the streets to work for the city because they can't afford to live here. So we have two members who came in through our housing and homeless committee.
So Judy, when you get members like that from another facet of the community, mm-hmm. and they join with a gift membership, how mm-hmm. do you engage them so that people stay connected and it's not just a one-year experience?
Yeah, well, in the first case, Mary, I'll say, came in to us hearing about our housing homeless committee at city council meetings and wanted to find out how we were doing things, and came to meetings when we were before COVID, meeting at a member's home And so the committee structure for her kept her in their activity with city council, with other housing groups. And the same with our second newer member who ran for city council in Palo Alto on a wonderful platform and got to know one of our members very well and said, gee, I'd like to continue what I'm doing, but do it from a community level. So the activity and the interest of the committee, and their role in the community, I think is keeping people. A third member that we brought in just recently came through our weekly vigils on a street corner in Palo Alto near Stanford, near a big high school and a shopping mall, major highways coming past us. And she just came and said, what are you doing? Who are you? Can I carry a sign? And she's come consistently. And we meet afterwards, sometimes just us and sometimes other people at our vigil, our sidewalk vigil, and exchange ideas, have a cup of coffee together when we can sit apart and meet safely or have lunch. So it's the social aspect of this woman who's had a lot of experience in peace projects from a high schooler in this area, just coming up and asking questions. I think her first question came because we used to be able to put large banners at that corner. And she said, what is this poor people's campaign? And what are these four things? Ending poverty, racism, militarism, and devastation of the planet. And how can I help? So the social, I guess, component of being part of the vigil, seeing action, standing there, getting response from people driving by, has led her to attend now one of our meetings and accept a gift membership, and was very pleased. She's also a psychologist and has worked to support our treaty petition event on January 22nd. And that was a pouring rain day, and I count that as a good proof that it was important for her to stand out there with other women and men. The last member is a woman who's not active. She has memory issues, not very good health. She used to be an active, raging granny, and she still has that connection. And she called me, cold called me. She gets our email, and she said, I'd like to contact people to get them to vote and to deal with the gerrymandering issue. But I really can't do Zoom meetings, and I can't come out for protest. Would that be worthwhile? And I said, you bet it would be worthwhile. So I gave her 40 names and got her started on that. So I think they're coming from different places when they see us in public, when they fear that because they're not very active, they won't be valuable, and to learn that they are, and to make a connection socially with people, like-minded people. There are also two members of who used to come to all of our pretty much pre-pandemic and at the start of the pandemic, who came from environmental issues, seeing that stood out there every week and had a variety of causes. And they brought their own signs and communicated and gave us a chance to have a coalition of environmental groups. We were disappointed that we didn't get members of those groups at our TPNW program and vigils, but we're working on that. The last thing is we are not making a successful inroad into the people of color in our two communities, and we need more members in order to be able to spread out our activities. We have three or four people on the housing committee, two of us on our disarmament committee. I'm a liaison with the Poor People's Campaign. And we need to somehow recruit. We're all over scheduled. So getting in new members in those communities, it's a little bit harder now. I used to be able to go to lunches at the senior centers in those communities of color. One thing we're doing is getting together a list of books that we will donate to the libraries in those two communities and be able to, when school comes back online and kids are able to borrow books through their classes, that will have some, I guess, credit
Thank you. Disability is really important. We encourage our members to be out in public as much as possible, to show up at other organization meetings and ask questions, and wear your WILF sash, bring a sign. All of those things are ways that you can set WILF apart from the rest of the people at the meeting. And how else will people know that you're part of WILF if we don't do something to identify ourselves that way?
I have to say that the buttons that are in the membership folders and my own collection of buttons work very, very well. It's hard sometimes to be holding large signs and walking and have a slippery sash, but the buttons are always available on our shirt collars and the large banners that people help us carry. I even rigged a walker, a medical walker, when I had one of my hip surgeries to a post at the corner. And it held up our End the Nuclear Era banner for the TPNW, a walker. So people would come up and say, do you use that walker? And I said, no, not anymore, but it's being very useful here. This walker and this pole stand for two people out there getting the message out.
Thanks, Judy. Francis, you also talked about the really important question of what would your branch be able to accomplish if you had more members? Can you talk a little bit more about what that question can evoke or inspire?
Sure. I think that a lot of times the world that we look at is shaped by the one we're in. And how we see the future is shaped by what we're in. And so for us in the union, if someone is working hard every day and struggling so that their family can get by and is just trying to, make the next paycheck, it can look like that's how it's going to be forever. And one of the things that people have to believe that something else is possible, and people have to believe that them participating in it is makes a difference. And so one of the things that I in the union we try to get people to do is to imagine what it would be like if you had twice as many or 10 times as many people that were doing any one thing that you're doing. And so we sometimes will tell a story of, for example, when I'm talking to workers in a hotel, about what it looks like when you bring a group of workers out on strike, and what it feels like when you see one group after another and one department after another, and all the cooks come out and all the dishwashers come out, and then all the housekeepers come down from the floors up above. And at first you're standing there and you think, this is never going to work. This is never going to work. I mean, I'm going to be here alone. It's going to be embarrassing. It's I'm going to get fired. And then when you see the first group of people come, flood out from one of the doorways, you start to feel excited. You feel inspired. And then you see an elevator open and people flood out from there. And they get excited from seeing you there. And pretty soon you have all of this energy in the room. And once people have had a little taste of that, we try to get people to imagine, well, what if every hotel struck? What if every hotel stopped working and everybody came together and gathered in the lobbies of their hotels? And what would happen if every hotel on the boulevard did that and everybody came out and stood in the boulevard all at once? And all this exercise really is to get people to believe, to think about and feel excited by their own power, and to believe that it would make a difference if they and think about the power that they would have if they could just get more people to join them, and if everybody became a part of this. And so I encourage you to do that in your own experiences, which is, if you, what would it mean to your organization, what you're doing, and how you would feel about doing it if you had 10 more people? What would happen if you had 100 more people? What would happen if you had 1,000 more people? Because I can promise you that every one of your chapters could have 1,000 people, right? It's not impossible to do, and there's never a better time to do it. And so I try to get, I've been taught myself to think about, okay, what would that feel like? What would it look like? And that's going to help push me to go get it. And so I encourage you to do that. What would it mean to your organization if you had 10 more, 100 more, 1,000 more that were participating with you?
Thanks, Francis. Yeah, I think so many of our branches have 3 to 5 people who do everything. Lots of people on the list, but not necessarily people who actually are active. And if you can imagine what it would be like to spread the leadership, to share the leadership more effectively, to have more people stand together on street corners, or to promote an event that you're having, if there were that many more people who were members and who were active, I think being able to envision that and think about what you do now and either what else you could do or how you could make what you're doing now even more effective than it is if you had more people, I think that's a powerful question. I know Jan is still on the phone. You were hoping that Yvonne Waldo would be on, but she's not. Jan, can you talk about what you wanted Yvonne to be talking about?
Well, I can share what she shared with me. I thought it was useful because she's in other groups as so many of us are. And she actually approached someone in another group that she's in and told her about Wilf, gave her some materials, and, the woman joined. And I think we forget that so many of us belong to more than one organization, and we should not be hesitant to ask people and, that we meet through other organizations to join our Wilf branch. So that's what she did in this instance that she shared with our group on one of our calls, and I thought it was important to share it tonight. Just we shouldn't hesitate for any reason at all. I think as Debbie and Francis said, make the ask.
Yeah, I think a lot of us fear that if we speak up and approach someone who's a member of another organization, we'll be seen as trying to steal their member. But actually, more and more organizations are realizing that there are synergies between these organizations. And to really be in touch with everything each one is doing is not a bad thing. And the best way to do that is to be a member of both. As long as your goals are synchronous in alignment, it's a really good idea to ask people to join. And I always say to people, if you can't be an active member, just know that your dues supports the work that we do. Because, I think all of us are members in name of other organizations that we, pay a membership to or an annual contribution to. It doesn't mean that we have to be deeply involved to support their work. And you can ask for that. You can ask just for that and then hope that once they're a member, they'll become more active if they understand more about what we're doing.
Yeah, well put. I agree. How about Odile and Diane? Are either one of them on?
Odile is not here. Okay. It was Chancy if she was going to be. Diane Blay is here. Did you want to introduce Diane?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to introduce the whole issue of new branches. And I think our committee's been just so tickled to be part of 3 new branches since I've been a member of our committee. The Rockford, Illinois branch, and most recently the Columbus, Georgia branch. And then this one that I'm really excited about that Diane has agreed to lead, which is our St. Adams branch, which think of all the people that are members that don't live close enough to a branch to be able to participate actively all across our section from, border to border. And Diane is the chair of the Jane Addams branch, and so I wanted her to talk about that, and I'm so excited that she's with us. So, Diane, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Okay. First of all, getting back to getting other people to know about Wilf, I don't think there's a better model than Darian, who in your signature. You can have the Wilf website. You can refer to that. You can have some information. And Darian often has quite a few lines of information about Wilf. And so I do that now. I have something right now. It's about the TPNW. But I think that's great. And also, I think it's good to include your telephone number because it makes it very easy to call the person back when something happens. But I just thought I'd throw that in before I start talking about the Jane Addams branch. And so, of course, it's very exciting to lead a branch that has the name Jane Addams in it because she founded Wilf. And so we're basically, I'm kind of new to being the chapter leader for it. But since September, we've had meetings. What we're trying to do is have something about Jane Addams every month because she had quite a life. And we had two guest speakers speak on her. And then we started off with an emphasis of trying to get people to know about the issue committees. So we had people, the issue committee chairs, at least a couple speak. But then we had a suggestion that we have a kind of a book club thing. And so we're going to discuss Joyce Blackwell's No Peace Without Freedom, Race and the Women's International League of Peace and Freedom, 1915 through 1975, at our meeting next week. So, and another thing that we do is, I think it's a great place to discuss the webinars that happen because not everyone can listen to the webinar necessarily or attended them. But a little, if someone can share what they gleaned from them, I think it's a great thing. We're trying to contact all, so Jane Addams branch members are virtual members and people have said that they'd like to be in it, but we're trying to contact all the members at large who aren't in a committee, who aren't in a chapter now, to see hopefully that they would join the Jane Addams if there's no local chapter for them. So that's
okay. Thank you, Diane. I want to invite people if they have questions now for Deb or Francis or Jan to raise their hand by pressing number one on your phone keypad. Well, we only have time for a few questions, so don't be shy. And we'd really like them to be questions, not comments, because we have experts here. We want to make use of them. Just to remind you that this program, One by One We Grow, meets monthly, and it's open to anybody in Wilf. So Jan's contact information is on the text pad, and you can talk to her about how to get involved. I'm looking for our raised hands here. I see three people with hands up, but I can't see who they are. Michael, can you tell me? Oh, here they are.
Lenny and Eileen.
Okay. Lenny, why don't you go first?
This is Lenny Villagomez Reeves. Give me my name. And this is a question for Deb and Francis. And it's about making that first contact. I'm okay at talking to people if they come up to the table, but I don't quite know how to start, you know? If they're standing there and I'm standing there, and what do I say first to get them to talk to me? Thank you.
Well, the first thing I usually say is, have you heard of Iowa Farmers Union, or have you heard of our organization? That just gets them talking. They'll tell you what they know. If they say no, you go into your elevator speech, the three or four sentences that Francis talked about. You want to get them talking.
And this is great. This is Francis. I'll just add one more thing to it. I agree with everything that was said about this already. I just would add, in a lot of ways, what I want to say is that it doesn't matter what you say, that much. There's no right or wrong thing for what you say. What's important is that whatever you're going to try saying, that you try it 100 times, that's what you have in mind.
Yeah.
Because if you do it 100 times, I promise that you will find the right way to do it. And that in my experience, my own personal experience, I will spend a lot more time thinking about what I'm going to say than actually saying it. And so I completely agree with what Deb said about, having the simple introduction. But even if you said, isn't it a beautiful day out today? Or hi, my name is, or I have a funny joke. It doesn't. If you say any of those things and you start a conversation, even if that conversation doesn't go well, if you do that 100 times, I promise you will become great at it and your organization will grow.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and Eileen Krakowski in Boston.
I just wanted to add something, and that was successful for our Boston branch. It wasn't really Boston branch. You're not too active, but I am. I would recommend that people use their webinar list and send out a message to everyone who attends, especially to those who are not members. Listening to Francis talk about these three approaches, you know, the anger or the story of hope or sense of empathy, landed up drafting and with the help of the Disarm Committee and Darian, drafting over and over again, we came up with something for the 900 plus people who were on the AFRICOM list, and about 6 people, we're not sure of the correlation, joined not too long after that message went out. I got credit for one person. Maybe there were 2 that came from that particular list. But keep those lists and use them is what I recommend.
I'll just add to that, that is absolutely true. We do a weekly lunch and learn webinar and a weekly legislative lunch and learn, and they're open to anybody. And I go afterwards and take those lists and put them in my prospect file. And also, I just want to stress that every occasion when you're doing a meeting or a webinar, or any public event, there should be a mention of membership, of joining WILF. And that's how we open our Lunch and Learn webinars, and we close by saying we'd love to have you as a member. And just today, like within 2 minutes of the webinar ending, somebody joined. So it's that you can't miss an opportunity.
Okay, well, I think we've run down our time on this. I really want to thank all of the encouraging description of the One by One We Grow project and the work that's being done to help WILF realize new members and to help us get better about reaching out effectively. Recruiting certainly is everyone's job. And Deb and Francis, thank you so much for helping us get better at it.